Change the world, change the world.
Oh, yes, we can.
We can change the world, we can change the world, change the world.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
War and hate to a place of love, it's not too late. Gotta save the children, we can't wait. Let's change the world. I am breathing for all of the people.
What a joy it is to be with you today. I want you to call me here at WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station, and AM 950 radio, the voice of progressive Minnesota. 773-763-9278, 773-763, WCPT 773-763-9278. We're going to be talking about a Kyrie Irving today, the supply chain disruptions that's going to drive up prices. Do you have enough toilet paper at home? Paper towels, food, all of that. It's thinking about that. That's Dr. Max Wolf is going to walk through that with us, and Dwight McKee is going to talk to us about Kyrie Irving, who spoke yesterday for the first time since he has not, since it's been revealed that he's not been vaccinated and he won't be allowed to play for the Nets until he is. So we're going to talk about that, and then we're dedicating the show today to Dr. Timuel Black. He's been with us for a century. We can't even remember when most of us, everybody just about on earth, has lived with this great historian, this Chicago institution. He made his transition at 104 years of age, everybody. We love Dr. Black, and we're going to be dedicating the show to him, and we're going to have the great Dr. Barb Starks, really one of the sons, if you will, a spiritual son of Dr. Timuel Black. And we're going to talk with him about the impact that he's had on this community. Everybody all around the country, I want you to know who Dr. Timuel Black is, because he will live in the annals of American history, not just Chicago history, American history. He's done so much. He's done so much to chronicle our lives. And his story is the life, really, of America. He wasn't enslaved, but he touched slavery. His parents, grandparents, all of that. And yet he continued to usher us into freedom and into liberty. And we just thank God for Dr. Timuel Black and send love to his widow, Mrs. Zenobia Black, today. Sending them much, 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 much love, everybody. Made his transition in the great neighborhood of Hyde Park. That's right. Everybody, please like and share. And all of my wonderful morning stars, if you would, go over to the Santita Jackson Show YouTube channel. We're trying to build up those numbers, and you're helping us to do that. So Raphael and Joyce and Louie Chewy and Vanderlei, how you doing, sweetie? And Kenneth, everybody, if you would, please go on over to the YouTube channel, the Santita Jackson Show, and let's bring up those numbers. Okay, everybody, before we hear from the great Pastor Darius Brooks of Grace Central out there in Westchester, Illinois, just outside of Chicago, let's bring up some of these headlines, everybody. In Chicago, today we're going to have a high of 69 degrees, scattered showers. At Minneapolis, St. Paul, 57 degrees. I think the fall is here, everybody. Partly cloudy. Didn't have a lot of activity on Wall Street yesterday. The Dow held steady, fell down half of 1 point. And the NASDAQ closed up 105 points. The S&P closed up 13 points. The Dodgers will be playing the Giants in the playoffs tonight. And guess what? NHL. That's right. Hockey season is right here with us. Well, the Blackhawks fell to the Ducks yesterday. 4-2, everybody. Well, what's going on with coronavirus? Some who were once vaccine hesitant seem to be changing their minds, according to this CNN report. One clinic in a heavily Latino part of South Texas is working to overcome barriers such as transportation, language, and a dearth of trusted information sources by ensuring that patients get facts about the shot and keep their appointment. So far, 35 states have fully vaccinated more than half their residents, while 5 more have fully vaccinated more than 2/3. And did you see the discussion that CNN's Dr. Sanjay Gupta had with the top podcaster in the United States, Joe Rogan? He had COVID and he used different treatments because he said at one point he was leaning toward getting the vaccine. But he decided against it, got COVID, and he used different he went through a different set of protocols using ivermectin and things like that. Ivermectin, by the way, is the animal grade is a horse dewormer, but actually it is an anti-parasitic drug that's been used for decades. And in fact, it won the Nobel Prize in 2015, interestingly enough. So that was a very interesting conversation to watch. I can't wait to really watch it again so I can parse it all out. 70 million people who get Social Security, including retirees and people with disabilities, will see their monthly payments soar starting next year. Benefits are set to jump, guess what, everybody, 5.9%, increasing monthly payments by $92 to an average of $1,657 for 2022. That's a good thing. Five people were killed and two were injured in a bow and arrow attack yesterday in Norway. A 37-year-old man had been arrested and charged, and he is believed to have acted alone. Not guns there, but bows and arrows. The January 6th committee is preparing to aggressively enforce subpoenas, and they're targeting former Trump DOJ officials. So we're going to see how that works. Will they be charged criminally or civilly? We will have to see. Democrats are sending the heavy hitters in to help Terry McAuliffe, the former governor of Virginia, who is now up to become governor again, who has been distressed that President Biden's falling popularity, at least his polling numbers, would hurt him in Virginia. He said that is what's hurting him. And so now Stacey Abrams and guess what? The big guy, President Barack Obama, will be going in to help him to campaign to try and get that seat. In the meantime, we're still trying to get the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill passed. That is two free years of community college, paid medical and family leave. So much is in that bill. Well, Sanders, president of vice president, that was Freudian. Senator Bernie Sanders and Pramila Jayapal, who is the head of the Progressive Caucus, they say that Medicare expansion in the reconciliation package is non-negotiable. Now, that's significant because Senator Joe Manchin has said he wants Medicare expansion off the table. We'll see who's going to hold on, everybody. Progressives are pushing to reject what they're calling outdated austerity policies, which are being pushed by Senators Sinema and Manchin. We will see how that goes. In the meantime, did you know this is October, but some people are calling this Striketober? More than 100,000 workers are authorizing work stoppages all over the country. About 10,000 farm equipment workers at John Deere are set to walk out today. If the demands of the UAW are not met, they were not met by last night. And on, we are watching healthcare workers in California and Oregon, 24,000 nurses who have authorized a strike. This is all over the country. Striketober, they're calling it. We can't make it without these people. So what do you think is going to happen, everybody? What do you think is going to happen? Striketober, everybody. In the meantime, let us get to Pastor Darius Brooks. I need some good news today. I was a little saddened by, not a little saddened, I was saddened by the news that Dr. Black had made his transition, but then I was so happy for him because God gave him a century, nearly 5 years, and we had him for so long. And what a blessing. He really is family to all of us. Pastor Darius Brooks of Grace Central. Of course, you know who Darius Brooks is. You know Your Will Is What's Best For Me, the Tommies, all of that. They just gave a fabulous concert down in North Carolina where he brought down the house. He and John P. Key. Give me some good news, Pastor Brooks.
Lizita, I'm so excited to be here. As your song says, you're feeding the hungry by changing the world. Mm. When people see family, they have hope. And God's word is not to make us feel bad or that we are right or wrong, Santita, but more to inform us to be his best design. So today I was talking about this, and we experienced something this week, you and I, on how we're to change the world. It's to create this word called family. Watch this. 1 Corinthians 14:19-20 says, however, Santita, check this out. In the church, particularly, he says this. However, in the church, I desire to speak five words with my mind so that I may instruct others also rather than 10,000 words in a tongue. And then 20 says, brethren, do not be children in your thinking, yet in evil be infant, but in your thinking be mature. Okay. Santita, so if I had you so I thought this morning on your program, which is what we're talking about today, I'm just being clear on how I'm seeing me. I'm just being clear on how I'm seeing me. Santita, I've learned in a very healthy way that when God says he'll give me the desires of my heart or he'll give you the desires of your heart, he's not talking about what I think I want. He's talking about what he has better than what I want. When one second guess themselves, they cannot see things very clear. And here, we could never have God's best. Most people who study the Word of God know that God founded the church on the family. It's not a human creation. It's a spiritual institution. God created it because he reveals himself as our Father, for real, for real, and tells us we are children. Therefore, those sin and ignorance have taken this word family out of context and have turned it into a place of abuse and pain. You do see this pattern in a lot of our lives. When we study God's word and rightly divide it, Santita, we don't abandon family, but we are called to redeem and rebuild this word family. How? I'm glad you asked. The human family is bloodline to man. The spiritual family is a God-word perspective to man. Humanity, in proper respect, should be family. It's how God meant to build cities, churches, businesses, ideas, inheritance, goals, faith, food, pantries, health groups, the Santita Jackson Morning Show, marriages, traveling, cooking, food, music, movies, etc. And we're citizens of how he creates and architects this word family. Upon this rock, I'll build my church, and the very gates of hell shall not prevail against it. A God family product doesn't likely come, Santita, from just brainstorming sessions where we focus intensely on how to do it, more than making sure that we create a family that reveals God's character of family. God's desire of family is that whatever, you got to get this, Santita, God's desire of family is that whatever you are a part of, you invest in, and whatever is a part of you, it invests in you. When you see you and God's understanding on how you see you, watch this, Santita, because here goes the kicker. He doesn't change the work. He changed our revelation to the work. I want to say that again. When we see us and understand God on how we're to see us, he doesn't change the work. He changed our revelation to his work. When it's something you honestly believe in, very cheerfully, you invest in it above and beyond what's already done. And don't forget, it invests in you above and beyond what's already done. If sin have twisted the city as it has, Santita, and sure enough, it's made it a place of pain and suffering. That doesn't mean we get rid of the city or family. We just don't scoff at it or take pleasure in man's definition of family and or its troubles. As believers, we're called to redeem and rebuild this word family, God's way. We don't abandon it. We rebuild it, and we rebuild it with like minds. If we're not careful, we'll be focused on what God is doing. And he's doing a lot, Santita. Here, your mind is all over the place. Be more focused on what I'm to do or you to do. And this is what we build this family. That's what you're doing with this Santita Jackson Show, informing us on what things are and how things should be. I love you. Don't you stop. And it's more people enjoying your show more than you can ever think or imagine. Always see clear on how God is seeing you, so you can make sure this family thing is in every area of our lives.
Amen. Amen. But you know what? We never know who's watching us. We never
know
who's
watching
us. Remember, God is watching us. Remember, that was in the song. But we never know who's watching us. So really, really try to watch what you say, how you say, what you do, how you do, because you don't know how you are lifting someone. But we are all family if we really, really, really understand it. We're all family. And you know what? We see that in crises. We see that in emergencies. I have to say this very quickly as I bring on Dr. Deborah Verholden from Michigan State University. She's their Associate Dean of Public Health, and she's on with us every morning. Thank God for that. You know, remember when they had the earthquake in 1989 and, you know, I was watching the World Series, and it just, everything suddenly went dark, and you were like, what happened? And I was very concerned because my cousin, who was very young at the time, and my aunt, my mother's sister, live out there. So I immediately called my parents. My father answered the phone, and quickly, he said, your aunt's okay. I already called out there. Your mom's not home right now, but your Aunt Connie's all right. And then they pivoted immediately, Pastor Brooks, to a shot of people running through the streets of San Francisco, pulling people out of buildings and out of cars. And these were civilians because they were dressed that way. And I said, wow, that's interesting. No one's asking anyone if they're straight, if they're gay. They're not looking to see if they're black, white, brown, yellow, red, trans, blah, blah, blah. They're trying to save a human being. That's what they're trying to do. And because at the end of the day, we are one, and we are family.
Mm-hmm. That's like mine. Absolutely. Yep.
I thank you for being part of our family. Thank you.
I'm
thank
so
you for
honored.
Being our family. He is just crazy, and we love Pastor Brooks. But stay right here. We've got Dr. Deborah Verholden on with us because we've got some questions for her today. She's not going to be with us very long because Dr. Verholden, I'm not going to say we lost him because we had Dr. Timuel Black for about 105 years on this earth. Unbelievable. And no one chronicled the life of Chicago and Black Chicago in particular like Dr. Timuel Black. So we're rejoicing today. We're not really in mourning. We're rejoicing today. But I'm thinking about a couple of issues. We've got the boosters that are now very real to us. They've gone from being theoretical, Dr. Deborah Verholden, to being real. So I was listening to the news this morning, and now there's a real question about whether you can mix the medicines, if you will. If you took a Pfizer, can you take the Moderna booster, and on and on and on and on and on. Is that science? Clearly the science is unsettled. What will settle it? Should people wait until more work has been done? Because, you know, people have just been going to get their boosters.
Yeah, so I advise people, do not take these matters into your own hands. I just wouldn't do it. You know, the whole point in getting and having strong medical advice and public health advice is that you get the information and then you can weigh it out for yourself. You know, I can't remember if it was, I think it was, it might have been Dr. Fauci who was sort of calling on people to sort of figure some things out on their own. I don't agree with that. I'm telling people we have regulatory agencies in place. If it is not FDA approved, either a full approval or an emergency use authorization. And I want to be clear, emergency use authorization is just a different level of regulatory approval. That is an approval. It's just a different level of regulatory approval. I wouldn't get it. The only circumstance under which that would be different is if my doctor looked me in my face, my doctor, who I trust, who I have a relationship with, and said, this is okay for you, or this is needed for you, or I'm strongly recommending this for you for reasons A, B, C, D, E, and then I would work that through with them. You know, people have actually been going out here. I had a conversation with somebody yesterday who went and got them a third dose of Moderna. Well, how did you get that? And they said they just went to the pharmacy and pretended to be a new patient. And I thought it was interesting. I said, well, you know my stance on this stuff. Why are you calling me and telling me this? And the person said, because I don't want to tell anybody else, but if something happens, I want you to know that I did that.
See, I'm trying to figure out where the breaks are, because as I've talked to you, I've found that, number one, there's a record of everyone who's taken a dose of one of these vaccines. Every vial has to be accounted for. When you walked us through that process, I said, oh, whoa. So how does this happen? How is it that people are able to just, they could possibly hurt themselves. How can this happen? You know, when
well, it's a couple
there's
things.
A record
well, let's not,
of
yeah.
who's taking it.
This system is not as robust as it sounds, first of all.
Okay.
Because if you don't have an ID, you can still get a COVID vaccine. So that one fact right there means that there's like a lack of real rigor, which we need. We don't want people to have to produce an identification in order to get a COVID vaccine. Why? Because we have a fair number of people who don't have valid identification. A lot of people went to prison or had things happen and they were separated from their things. So I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying I doubt that every single human being who's gotten a shot has been cataloged, it's been appropriately attached to them, et cetera, et cetera. I don't believe that that has happened. I believe that's the aspirational goal, but likely not what has happened in reality. The second thing is, even if you do produce all this valid ID and information, there's no system that's telling somebody in real time. It's not like they would put your information into a system and it would say, oh, no, she's already been vaccinated. She's not eligible. There's no check and balance. There's just this, you know, magical place that this data is going to as it's being input that can be queried. But it's not a real-time exchange. It's not informing or, you know, giving providers insider information about who they can and can't give the shot to. So, yeah, people are doing a lot of just flying by the seat of their pants. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
and physicians, too. Physicians are sort of trying to help their patients navigate and figure out what's best. What we have right now is the Pfizer is approved for third dose for people who got Pfizer. That's it. They think Moderna will have an approval and perhaps even Johnson & Johnson by November. Moderna has applied, but it hasn't been approved yet. So I just tell people, just wait and see. Because the problem is they don't want people to get a third dose if it's not going to be helpful. And we're still understanding the potential risk. You know, and don't get me wrong, even if there's a risk from a third dose, that risk will be far outweighed for many people by the potential benefit. But we need to fully understand those risks, understand who's at risk, and then have the risk mitigation strategy in place so that we can do everything to increase the benefit and also manage and mitigate the risk. So people just got to slow down. It's a strange place we're in now because we've got some people who won't get one dose, and then other people who are clamoring to get a potential third dose prematurely or one that they don't need yet.
20 doses. Shoot me up. Just nobody wants COVID. You know, I'm not laughing at anybody, but you know, you know what? I can't wait to have you back tomorrow because we have a lot to talk about. I came across a story this morning about parents of who say that Walgreens. And mistakes happen, everybody. Mistakes
I saw
happen.
That. Gave their 4 and 5-year-old, gave up the whole family a COVID shot instead of a
tomorrow.
Flu shot.
Can we really walk through that tomorrow?
I really want to, but it's more of an exception. So that's a rare thing, but we can talk about it. But this is exactly why.
Yeah, I mean, let's walk through it because I think parents really. They need to know that because now they had to take one of the children to a cardiologist, a pediatric cardiologist, because their heart has been affected. And we're, you know, Moderna in Iceland, they won't let them use it. So I want us to walk through that because I get a lot of questions. I'm just trying to bring you what I get. You know, I love you, Dr. Deb. We're going to be talking about Dr. Tim Yule Black with Dr. Bob Starks in just a few minutes. This great icon has made his transition. I'm going to look back on his life of more than 100 years. Back in just a minute. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Santita Jackson Show. As we bring on Dr. Bob Starks to talk about Dr. Tim Yule Black, I want to go to a couple of the callers. I'm coming to you from WCPT, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station and AM 950 radio. Before we go to Dr. Starks, I want you all to keep calling me at 773-763-9278, 773-763-WCPT. Let me go to Jim from Chicago. Jim, what's on your mind?
Hi, Santita. Yeah, I'm a senior. I got my polio vaccine when I was a kid, and I never thought Jonas Salk was some sinister person trying to control me. Mm-hmm. Even when Gerald Ford came out with the first flu shot, I was reluctant to take it, but I never thought that he was doing it for some sinister purpose.
And you remember he turned over the patent because he didn't want to personally benefit from it. Dr. Salk.
Well, Jonas Salk. Yeah, Jonas Salk. Which is, that won't happen today because people are
sure.
So far removed. I know it should happen, but altruism is a dead, you know, how many altruistic people, you know. My point being that this particular shot is apparently the Republicans feel it's a control.
Well, you know what, Jim, let me say this. I don't think it's just partisan, because when I look at Kyrie Irving, who we're going to be talking about at the top of the hour, that's not his, he doesn't have political objections to this. And I think that we make a mistake when we just really look at, say, maybe a libertarian or Republican's take on, and some Democrats, quite frankly, some people's take on liberties, and this is my body, and da-da-da-da, because African-Americans.
Yeah, but I've never heard that discussed with other vaccinations. Like even the flu shot, I never heard it was liberty.
Yeah, but
I never heard Jonas Salk talk about liberty. I mean, these are just unique.
Eisenhower wasn't talking about the vaccine. It's now much more. Now the government is paying for it. I mean, I'm just trying to look at this globally, right, Jim? And now you have the president on television every day.
How many people are going to die, Santita, because they can't get this vaccination?
No, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm trying to listen to what people are saying and why they feel the way that they do. Because now, Jim, this is not even about facts. This is about feelings.
You know, I agree. You know. It's almost impossible to rationalize. How do you rationalize feelings? It's not rational.
Well, you don't.
The whole world's got to get. We all know the world's got to get vaccinated. The third world is going to die. We know that thousands of people are going to die because they won't give up the intellectual property to these vaccines to give them manufacturing. We know that.
I don't think that they have to die, Jim. I think that what we have to do,
well,
we need
equity. They're going to die because they're going to die. There's no doubt
Jim,
about they're going to die.
Jim, some people have not been vaccinated and they've not died. But what we also need, in addition to getting access to vaccines,
I know, but what about the ones that did die? What about the 700,000 Americans that did die?
I understand.
Die?
And then the millions who haven't died, Santita.
They should not have died.
Jim, I'm not trying to have a fight with you. Jim, this is part of the problem.
But they shouldn't have died.
Jim, Jim, calm down, honey. This is part of the problem we've got. I'm trying to have a quiet conversation with you, and I understand your emotion.
How many people do you think should die?
I buried one of my best friends last April, and I just brought my parents out of the hospital. We were scared to death.
I understand.
No. So it's not that COVID has not touched me. So what I'm simply trying to say to you is, if you and I can't have a conversation where the volume is down, where we can talk to each other, what hope is there for the rest of the country?
I know, but why are we at this point?
Because so much in our country has been politicized. And then there is a breakdown of trust. A lot of people have not been honest with us about a lot of things for decades. And so we are here. This did not just happen, Jim, overnight. This happened decades ago. And we've continued to go down the rabbit hole. So if with all due respect, what we have to do is, number one, respect other people's positions, even when we don't agree with them. Listen to them, because more often than not, Jim, people just want to be heard. You want to be heard this morning, and I respect
that. Well, wait, think of this thing. First of all, if this thing happened in January of 2020, nobody from the CDC, no scientist on the planet got on the Internet and warned us about a disease that was imminent.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, they dropped the ball to begin with. I mean, the people, the authorities, forget politics. The doctors themselves, the scientists themselves dropped the ball. They should have been on that Internet giving it to the pharmacists and the doctors all over the country and let them know that it was an imminent disaster, a pending disaster.
Yeah.
We were kept in the dark for two solid months by the CDC and by every doctor on the planet.
And you know what? And when that happens,
they dropped the ball.
When you're told not to wear masks, and on and on and on. So what we're having to do, we can't relitigate that. what we have to do is go forward. But you have to go forward understanding that there's a lot of mistrust and distrust out here. You have to respect that.
But then we can move forward.
What we cannot do, Jim, is diminish anybody. That's a mistake.
We have to improve.
We do.
Let me go on. I'm sorry to take.
No. You didn't. But I'm gonna tell you, as we, I send you much love and many blessings, everybody. If we do not begin to respect each other's positions, whether we disagree with them, that's what the whole point of freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is defending. If you can't defend the right for someone with whom you disagree to speak, then we've lost the whole point of this American project.
Well, I want to believe that Jim, I'm going to have to let you go. All right, okay, dear.
It's okay, sweetie. It's okay. I want to thank you. But we've got to begin to... You can't talk over people. You can't nullify people and their experiences. We have to stop that. That's what happens with all of these matters. When I, as a black woman, tell you I was dealing with this issue and people ask you incredulously, well, was that racist? Yes, it was. Then people want to argue me down about what I know about racism. Please, I'm on the other, I got it. Sexism, all that. And, you know, we've got to stop that. Start listening to each other, everybody, and stop demonizing everybody. Stop it. People are not devils. They're people with their own experiences. Respect that. Before I go to Dr. Bob Starks, let me get Blake from Indianapolis. Blake, what's on your mind, sweetie?
Hey, Santita, I just want to push back against what Dr. Fulholden was talking about because, I mean, do you consult your doctor every year if you want to get the flu shot? I mean, if it's already FDA approved and people have already got their shots, you know, this might be a situation where we have to get a booster shot possibly every 6 months, 9 months, you know, a year, year and a half, whatever it might be, in order for us to alleviate this situation every year.
Well, you know, I think that we need to be open to... I think we just need to continue to be open because I want to know just how effective the shots are. You know, why does Pfizer fall off so quickly? We need to open up the discussions about this so that we can all feel safe. I think that's what needs to happen. And, you know, as Dr. Deborah Fulholden, as you said, as she has said to us, the pandemic, COVID-19 is now endemic. It's with us. And we have to figure out how we're going to live with it. Thankfully, you know, we have different therapeutics that are coming out. That's good. How are we going to live with masking? How are we going to do all of this? You know, Blake, I think we've just got to continue to talk that through and walk it through. But we need to have people like Dr. Deborah Fulholden, Dr. Shanina Knighton, who's an infection preventionist. I mean, Blake, for us not to have had an infection preventionist talking to us about how we can prevent getting infections is just crazy to me. You know what I mean, Blake?
Now, something else I want to throw at you is that, okay, now, when everybody gets the chickenpox, right, you get your vaccination for the chickenpox,
mm-hmm.
and then you get exposed to it, right? And then, in theory, you got longevity of immunity to the chickenpox, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, what's to say that somebody shouldn't be vaccinated and then be on purpose exposed? So then they have more long-lasting immunity to this virus.
So you're speaking of natural immunity?
No, I'm not. I'm saying somebody should get vaccinated and then also be exposed after they've been vaccinated so that they have longer-lasting immunity, just like the chickenpox.
Well, you know, we don't know. Well, actually, the chicken, that happens before you get the chickenpox, because when you get those actual vaccines as we've understood them, and I'm not a scientist, you know, you are given basically the disease so that your body can learn to fight it off. That's not what's happening here. But I want you to call in the morning because we're going to have Dr. Deborah Fulholden and Dr. Knighton back so we can talk about that, because you should talk to Dr. Knighton about exposure and how that might impact you. And we should speak with Dr. Deborah Fulholden with your other questions. Would that be helpful to you, Blake? Because I don't want to speak out of turn.
Well, I just don't want to put this in a box where we've got to approach this from what we like a certain way that we should be, you know, shooting it at. You know, we should be thinking about all angles on how to kill this thing.
That's right. And or how to live with it and manage it, you know, as we do other viruses, because this doesn't have to kill us. You know, the fact is when people first present themselves as feeling that they've got COVID-19, they ought to be able to, they ought to get therapeutics immediately. That's not been happening. So that what happened with Governor Abbott in Texas, he was fully vaccinated. He was COVID-19 positive. They gave him Regeneron immediately. That should happen for everybody. It should happen for everybody.
Okay, now I...
But you know,
I
Blake...
I personally...
Okay, very okay. quickly.
Okay, I was just going to mention that I personally, I don't trust the UPS guy, right? But, okay, the UPS guy brings me a package every day.
Okay.
That's the same thing with Dr. Fauci. Okay, I don't know personally, you know, nobody knows Dr. Fauci personally, most of us. Okay, now, but what he does, he knows what he's talking about. That's what I'm saying, is that even though I'm not in that job, you're not in that job, he's the one doing that job. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, I think that specifically, that's why I bring on Dr.
Trust.
Well, see, but that's why I bring on Dr. Holden.
To do with it.
No, but that's why I bring on Dr. Fur Holden and Dr. Knighton every day, because they specifically know what he does. He's a physician, okay? And he's not an epidemiologist, for example. They're different people who do different jobs, and I think that when you call back tomorrow so that you can ask these experts in this space, because bottom line, as I'm watching this, my chat line, you just have people who have a lot of mistrust. You have a lot of people who have a lot of distrust. And what I've tried to do every day is bring people who are experts in this space who can allay your fears. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm not going to do that. But what I will try to do is give you some information so that you can make an informed decision. That's all I can, that's all you can ask of anyone, so that you can make an informed decision and take care of yourself. Whether you're vaccinated or not, whether you've gotten the shots or not, you still need to mask. You still need to practice excellent hand hygiene. You still need to practice excellent oral hygiene. You still need to change out your masks every few hours, on and on and on. And these are things that we're not even discussing. We just say get the vaccine. It's a little bit more complex than that. And I'm hoping that 18 months, almost 2 years into this thing, it's more than 18 months, that we will begin to get those messages out. I'm sending you much love, Blake, but I need to bring on Dr. Bob Starks, who's really brilliant retired professor from Northeastern Illinois University. He's worked at Rainbow Push and most of the major civil rights organizations in this country. He's an historian, he's an activist, and he's taken his PhD into the streets, if you will, from the halls of academia into the streets. And we just are so grateful for him. Indeed, he's really a spiritual son of Dr. Timuel Black, this giant who's gone to get his heavenly reward. Dr. Bob Starks, how are you today?
Pretty good. Thank you for having me on. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. It took me a minute to get to you. I thank you for your patience.
No problem.
There's so much going on. Well, you know what? I've got about 10 minutes here. Would you explain to us who Timuel Black was and will always be, and why so many of us, when we heard, even though he was more than 100 years old, you know, it was like we still didn't want to let him go, Dr. Starks.
Well, first of all, he was 2 months shy of becoming 103 years old. His birthday is December 7th, so that's about two months away. So he lived a long, fruitful life, and we will certainly miss him. And as you said, he's gone on to his heavenly reward.
Mm-hmm.
He was indeed a historian, an activist, a spiritual man who indeed worked in almost every area of civil rights. One of his major accomplishments and dedication was to labor. And that was how I got introduced to him, was when I found out that he was one of the founders of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. And of course, the oldest member of that group. And of course, that was, in the 1960s that was born. and he remained a member and an active member. And, of course, as you know, black labor unions have been demonized. And he, of course, fought bravely for the rights of black union members. He, of course, was close to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He helped to get Mayor Harold Washington elected. He helped to get Barack Obama elected. It was really interesting that when Barack Obama decided to run, everybody told him, go and talk to Samuel Black. So he and Tim had a long, drawn-out conversation, and Tim said, yeah, why didn't you try it? And he, of course, became the president of the United States. So, yes, he was quite a giant, an historian, both writing as well as oral historian, and a political activist. And, of course, some people don't know, but he was very much in political science. He became a member of an organization that I was a member of in political science, the National Conference of Black Political Scientists. And we gave him an award in 2009, I think it was, yes. So, yes, he was active. He was active in the Association for the Study of African American Life and History. But he was all over the place. And, of course, as you know, he was close to Reverend Jesse Jackson and Rainbow Bush.
Well, one of the last times that I saw him was at our Christmas party in 2019. And the whole room, it was hundreds of people there, the whole room, the energy shifted to the corner when we saw him come in, and he actually got up and spoke and really gave a history of black people in Chicago and where he felt that we needed to go. What do you think he would be saying about this particular time?
Because
he was active up until the end, Dr. Starks. That's what's so amazing about this man.
Absolutely, and clear. I mean, his memory was just amazing, because most of us can't remember dates and times the way he did. That's at 102 right. years old.
Yes,
which was quite interesting. But yes, he, of course, in terms of the last conversations we had on politics, he was saying, in effect, that we have to urge the President of the United States to pass the voting rights bill, because indeed, if Democrats do not pass those bills, it is highly unlikely that they will be able to hold the Congress and the presidency. Because again, we're right on the eve of 22, and of course, that's when the House and much of the Senate will be reelected. And if you're going to have those states like Texas and Georgia that is trying to restrict African-American voters, it's going to be very hard for Democrats to hold on to the Congress.
Mm.
And he, of course, talked about that. He and I talked about that quite a bit. Mm-hmm.
Why do you think he was so concerned about where we are right now? It seems that everything is on the table. What did he feel was so critical about this particular moment in which we're living?
Well, he was always comparing this period to past periods. So he had the perspective of where we had come from, where we are, and trying to say, and figure out where it is we want to go. And, you know, I've always been of the mind that if you don't know where you come from and you don't know where you are at the moment, there's no way you can predict where you are going. And, of course, that was his major impetus, was to look at the past, the present, and try and figure out how it is to go and and voting rights is one of his major things that he and Dr. King were fought for, as well.
Why?
As Jackson.
Why voting rights?
Because it's the basis of a democratic society. If you don't have a way in which ordinary citizens can participate in the democracy, then you don't have a democracy. You have an autocracy or a dictatorship. And that, of course, is absolutely crazy. And, of course, we are on the road toward that if the Republican Party can get its way in restricting the voting rights, restricting abortion rights, I mean, all of those things. If they have their way, we will have a dictatorship, and that is terrible. And, of course, Dr. Kim Wright and Kim Black talked about that. We talked about that extensively. And, of course, he came through the era where the fight for voting rights, civil rights, desegregation, et cetera, was at the forefront. And therefore, he understood, again, where we were, where we are, and hopefully where we are headed.
Well, I've got 1 minute left here. Well, actually, two. Your final thoughts about Dr. Tim Black?
Well, my final thought is that he is an icon, as you stated in the introduction, a historian, and one that we will hold dear to us as we go about. And the one thing that really touched me is his dedication to teaching and informing young people, which, of course, is our salvation. If we don't bring along our young people, we are in trouble. And he, of course, is dedicated to that as a teacher in the Chicago public school system and the City College of Chicago.
He took it right where, I mean, and he stayed with the people all of his life.
Absolutely. All of his life, activist in every organization that was dedicated to liberating and pushing the democracy forward.
Well, we thank you for being, thank you for all that you do, because indeed you're one of his spiritual sons. I mean, Dr. Bob Starks,
absolutely,
retired professor at Northeastern Illinois University, he said, you know, that's all you need to say about me. You can say so much more. He has been a political father for so many people. He and my father have worked alongside one another for more than 50 years. I remember when you were on staff at PUSH, trying to help keep things running and moving and getting us and really engaging young people in the political process. Tyrone Crider and Ray Lewis Thornton. And so many people. And you were never, ever, ever too busy to talk to us. And you were always very eager to find out if we'd been registered to vote when we were about to turn 18. You were always willing and ready and available to tell us why all of these issues were so important, and we love you and thank you for being functioning in that tradition of all of these great intellectuals who go from the ivy-covered walls to the suites, right to the streets. They stay with the people. Dr. Robert Starks, everybody, retired professor from Northeastern Illinois University, and he's worked for every civil rights organization that exists. How about that?
Thank you.
We love you, Dr.
Thank
Starks.
You.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Let's talk about Kyrie Irving, everybody. Kyrie Irving, you know, he's a very interesting guy. He finally spoke out on Instagram. He said that he was promised a vaccine exemption. Really interesting. We're going to be talking about him with Dwight McKee and then about the supply chain breakdown that's going to cost us a whole lot of money. Back in just a minute.
Keep their pride and self-respect. We can change the world, change the world, change the world.
Oh, yes, we can.
We can change the world, we can change the world, change the world.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
War and hate to a place of love, it's not too late. Gotta save.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Santina Jackson Show, WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station, and AM 950 Radio, the voice of progressive Minnesota. Our brothers and sisters to the north, hey, everybody, I want to hear your voices today at 773-763-9278. Blake and Jim, thank you for calling in the last hour from Chicago and Indianapolis. 773-763-9278. 9278 773-763 WCPT. If you want to text me at that number, it's great. GWC Injury Lawyers gives you the opportunity to do that. I want to hear your thoughts, everybody, about Kyrie Irving and about the supply chain that has been broken. It's going to cost you some money, everybody. Price is already rising on toilet tissue, food, everything. You've got the biggest port that we've got, or the most active, is in Long Beach, California. They control half of what gets into the country. And everything's just stuck. What's going on? Have you walked into different stores lately, dime stores and grocery stores? I've seen more empty shelves. I'm like, in the United States? Really? So we're going to be talking about that. And then Kyrie Irving has spoken, so I want to hear Dwight McKee's thoughts, and I want to hear your thoughts about his stance. Apparently, he thought he had an exemption. Interesting. I want to thank Mike Mercado in the last hour, who came in at the last minute, and he was the pitch hitter, and I want to thank him. I want to thank Matt Cummings, our program director, for stepping in to do the same, and I want to thank Paul Chivari for being here 3 days a week, and Devin Andrakis and Cosme Lozano. They are people who really helped to make this show go. And, of course, you know, we all started with Lady B, Bedalia Pateva. And I just want to thank all of you for all the work that you do, not just on my show, but on all of the shows in WCPT and AM 950 Radio. It takes a lot of people to make all this work. Teamwork makes the dream work. Everybody in Chicago, we're going to have a high of 69 degrees, scattered showers. I think it's already showering right now. Yeah, it looks a little wet outside. Minneapolis, St. Paul, 57 degrees, partly cloudy. I think autumn is here, everyone. The Dow closed down, really was negligible yesterday. Not a lot of activity on the street. It closed down half a point. The NASDAQ closed down 105 points. The S&P 500 closed down 13 points. And the Dodgers will be facing off against the Giants today. NHL season is here. Guess what? The Wild up in Minnesota didn't play, but the Blackhawks from Chicago played, but they lost to the Ducks 4-2, everybody. All right. Dr. Tim Ewell Black, the Chicago icon, the historian, the political scientist, the great man who would have been 105 in a couple of months. He made his transition, but boy, oh boy, what a legacy he leaves. The counselor to Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Reverend Jesse Jackson, President Barack Obama, and so many people down through the years, the repository of so much of Chicago's history, Black history, American history. We thank God for him today and send our condolences to his family, of course, starting with his wife, Mrs. Zenobia Black, everybody. The coronavirus, some who have been vaccine hesitant seem to be changing their minds. One clinic in a heavily Latino part of South Texas is working to overcome these barriers by offering transportation, help with a second language, and a dearth of trusted information sources by ensuring that patients get the facts about the shot and keep their appointments. Roughly 70 million people who get their Social Security checks, including retirees and people with disabilities, will see their monthly payments, everybody, start to soar next year by 5.9%. Their payments will increase by $92. Good for them. The January 6th committee, preparing to aggressively enforce subpoenas. Will people who don't respond to the subpoenas be charged criminally or civilly? We will have to see, and we are in full swing of Striketober. Workers all over the country are going on strike about their working conditions and all kinds of issues. But, you know, all week we have been talking with Attorney Robert Petillo, Southeastern Regional Director for Rainbow Push. Of course, he has his own show, very popular show on WAOK, the iconic Black talk radio station down in Atlanta, every Sunday from 1 to 4 Eastern Standard Time. They're having the Creating Opportunity Conference. And before we talk about Kyrie Irving, I understand we have a lot of people who've been listening to this show who are going to be joining the conference. The conference is free. It's virtual. Robert Petillo, it begins today.
thank you so much, Santita, and I really appreciate the platform you've given us to spread the word about this, because, of course, it is the it's always been the Southeast Regional Conference, but because of you and your voice, it's really expanded. We're getting people registering from Chicago and Milwaukee and Madison and California and all across the country. So today is day one of the Creating Opportunity Conference. People can still register. It's a completely free virtual conference. You can register at creatingopportunityconference.com. Today we're going to be beginning with a legislative roundtable combating voter suppression with representatives from all of the Southeast states talking about what they're doing individually to combat Republican voter suppression efforts. We also have a women in leadership roundtable as well as black farmers on day one. And then we'll be talking to our corporate to our corporate diversity representatives later on in the week, as well as the criminal justice reform panel, youth entrepreneurship. So we got some great sessions coming through. And, of course, I'll be emceeing, so I'll just be kind of hovering around in the background. So this will be a great event. Again, people can register. It's free, creatingopportunityconference.com. And we also encourage people to go to rainbowpush.org to get a Rainbow Push Coalition membership so you can support us putting on these types of programs.
Absolutely. Creating opportunity, because even in times like these, there's an opportunity. Crisis creates opportunity. With the young entrepreneurs, you expect to have people as young as what and as old as what? No age limit?
We are having, I think the youngest company is a lemonade stand that two young girls have started. They've incorporated as a business. They are 6 and 7 years old. And wow. I think the oldest is 15, who has been running the hot dog stand, which is now a standalone business. A 15-year-old who has a mortgage and a business and a parking lot and payroll out in Stonecrest, Georgia. We're going to have them on with some people from the business community who will be able to talk to them about how exactly they can grow their businesses into enterprises. And we're going to have a special performance from Saban music artist Nakia Gold, who's going to be giving Reverend Jackson a birthday tribute, but also talking to our young entrepreneurs about what it took for her to succeed in the music industry. So we have some great surprises, great guests, and I think it'll be great information. It's the creatingopportunityconference.com.
All right, everybody. Attorney Robert Petillo, can't wait for him to take a bit of a breath and join us again next week. Sending you much love, Robert Petillo. Thank you so much, everybody. Go to creatingopportunity.com or go to rainbowpush.org and find out about the conference. It starts today pretty much after I get off the air. You don't want to miss it. It's free. It's virtual. And it will be well worth your while. I've got to thank Dr. Marnie Reeves for pulling my pigtail, if you will, or my ponytail, my bun, so that I would, she said, we've got to publicize this conference. Thank you, Dr. Reeves. Let's go to Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving, the Nets superstar, one of the most talented basketball players, not only of this era, perhaps of all time. Many people have speculated he's done such great, great work. Interesting guy. He holds dual citizenship with the United States and Australia. Indeed, he was born in Australia. His father was a professional basketball player, and he's Australian and an American citizen. Wow. And very well-educated guy, and someone who is determined to make a difference, as he has said. He wants his life to mean something. Very, very interesting young man. Very interesting young man. Very well educated, very well read. And many people have been wondering, was he vaccinated or not? It turns out he was not, and he's been one of the holdouts, indeed. And so the story has now come out that he has suggested, as he spoke to Instagram yesterday, because he's been very silent. He's just been silent throughout all of this, as people have speculated about his status and about what's going on with him. And he finally came out yesterday and said, you know, I had to stop running away from using my voice, quote, and using my platform to speak on what's true and what's mine. You know, nobody's going to hijack my voice. Don't believe I'm retiring. Don't believe I'm going to give up this game for a vaccine mandate or for staying unvaccinated. Don't believe any of that. Really be aware of what's being said before I even get a chance to be on the podium and speak for myself. He said, this is my life. I get to do whatever I want with this. This is one body that I get here, one God body that I get here. And you're telling me that what to do with my body? It has nothing to do with the organization. I'm going to put that out there. It has nothing to do with the Nets. It has nothing to do with my teammates. This has everything to do with what's going on in our world. I'm being grouped into something that's bigger than the game of basketball. Call me at 773-763-9278. 773-763-WCPT. We've got noted social scientist Dwight McKee on with us today. Can't wait to see this documentary about you and Reverend Dr. Hatch and Arnie Duncan, the great work that you all are doing with our kids on the west side of Chicago. Dwight McKee, you've worked with young people now for more than 50 years, and this is a young man who has a very interesting background, very thoughtful young man, and he is holding on to his position. What do you make of all of this? And what do you make of the fact that he's suggesting that he was promised a vaccine exemption, and this has gone much further than he ever thought that it would?
Well, I think he may have been promised an exemption before it became a political issue. With the mandates in New York, where you can't work for the public sector unless you're vaccinated, has created a real backdraft that and a real momentum to those who have bucked that system. And so they have to really kind of make him an example that they're serious about everybody being vaccinated, and you can't be with the public sector and keep your job unless you have a vaccination. And so I think the politics may have caught up with the moment, and even if they make that promise to him, they feel compelled to make him an example.
And at this time, at least up until this moment, he's pushing, I'm not saying he's pushing back, he has dug in his heels. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that he has the right to his own position. And I think that if they, you know, can't prove that he has the disease, that he has no compelling reason to get a shot if it runs counter his beliefs. It's very interesting that the same people who are pro-choice and some who are pro-life and whose position is, this is my body, I can make my own decisions and you don't have the right to decide for me, are neutral on his position, which is really the same position, is that this is my body, I have choices, I've decided not to take the vaccine, it does not make me a bad guy, I just made a different choice. And so it seems it's the same crowd that's pro-choice or pro-life would be rallying in the streets for him to make his own choices. And those, like in the police department, in the fire department, who have also decided not to take the vaccine, they should be marching the streets in their behalf, as they expect us to march in the streets in behalf of those who are pro-choice. You know, it's very interesting, Santita. It's last week, the doctors came out and said aspirins will not necessarily stop your heart attacks. For the last 20, 25 years, they have been encouraging, cajoling, imposing the notion on everybody, take an aspirin, and it will improve your condition and your situation in case you have a heart attack. Every doctor I know have subscribed that. Now all of a sudden they decide, well, maybe this wasn't the greatest idea. Maybe aspirins don't do that much for you. In fact, maybe they do cause you harm. You never know consequently where these things are going. And so people need to have the right to make their own choices, because ultimately they're the ones that have to deal with the consequences.
Well, what do you say about an airborne illness at this time? You know, I have your right to, you know, to make this choice really ends at my nose, literally. What do you say about that?
Well, most illnesses are airborne. But you don't have the same stipulation that because the flu is airborne, that unless you take a flu shot, you can't work or you lose your job. I think part of the suspicion is, why this vaccine, why this disease, what makes it so profoundly different that it becomes mandatory if there are other alternatives, if there are other options, if the mask, in fact, is effective, and if there's no proof that the vaccine necessarily will stop you from getting the disease, as in your father's case, then people become very suspicious to see, well, what are the real motives behind this? Is this about the disease, or is this about something else? Is this about the disease, or is this about government control? I think people can have all kinds of reasons to resist it. Some can be philosophical. Some can be religious. Some can be political. But you have, I would think, in a democracy, most people, including Kyrie, feel like they have the right to choose for themselves. Mm-hmm. And that does not necessarily make them a bad guy. Just like if you choose right to life or you have the right to choose does not make you a bad person. It's just you making choices in your own behalf with your own body.
And to be fair, you know, in my father's case, like in so cases of so many breakthrough cases that we're beginning to see, as now has been explained to us, when we first heard about the vaccine, we thought we'd been inoculated. Actually, that's not true. It mitigates the severity of COVID-19 when you get it. And indeed, that did happen in his case. But many people have mistakenly thought, well, not mistakenly, we were kind of told this initially, that this would be the cure, this would end everything. And that is not what's happened, and I think that's part of the confusion, and it's sowed some seeds of distrust and mistrust. But there we go. Let me go to the tax doctor. The tax doctor wants to have his say this morning. How you doing, tax doctor?
Good morning. Fantastic show, as always. Let me say this. I say to the FOP, get the shot. Basketball players, get the shot. I don't care how much money you're making, get the shot. We lost 702,000 citizens in our country to this virus. We lost 700 cops around the country because they did not get the shot. Folks, wake up. Let's not be stupid. Let's not be stupid.
But let me ask you this, tax doctor. I mean, well, hold on, tax doctor, because I think part of the problem that we have here is that for those people who haven't gotten it, and for those people who got the shot and who got COVID anyway, I don't think that we should be calling people stupid. A lot of people have a lot of reasons. Let me just say this, because I heard from Blake and Jim earlier today, and I'm hearing from people. And what I'm saying is, the well is poisoned. We cannot even have a decent conversation about this without name calling. Now, a lot of people have a lot of reasons that they're doing what they're doing. People are getting their shots for their own reasons, and they're not. But the fact is, whether you've gotten it or not, you still need to wear a mask. You still need to practice good hand hygiene. And you know what is not smart? Tax doctor, we don't have infection preventionists like Dr. Shanina Knighton on TV and on radio all over the place telling us how to prevent contracting this disease. No, how absolutely smart is that?
Well, I'm a veteran.
No. Stay right there. Answer that question for me. How smart is it that in a pandemic, we don't have an infection preventionist telling us how not to get it?
That's crazy.
Okay.
That is crazy. I'm a veteran.
Okay.
I'm a veteran. And most of my vets got the shot. My family members got the shot.
And that's his right, Santita.
Absolutely.
Shot. You don't need to impose that necessarily on me if I don't believe in the shot. We've lost more kids to abortion than we have to this virus. If you're talking about a numbers game, yet the people who are pro-choice still believe they have the right to make the decision for themselves. If we decided that if you were not pro-choice, that you would lose your job or be suspended from your job, people would be outraged. if it's a numbers game, more babies die from abortion than people die from COVID. So it's not about the numbers. It's about the choosing. It's about the right to choose.
Well, you know,
if a woman wants to have an abortion, she should have that right. No man should tell a woman what to do with her body.
Okay.
So what is the difference? What are you doing? I mean, what's the difference between that?
I'm looking at it from a point of view that I'm looking at how many folks in our country have died from this virus. And if we lost 702,000, and that number's going to go up.
But you know what else has happened, tax doctor? Well, tax doctor, there is attorney Hoffler has a case where there was a young man down in, really a boy, really, on his way to Morehouse College. He had a full scholarship. And he complained to his parents about being ill. They suspected he had COVID. They took him to the hospital, and the hospital sent him home. When he got home, he got sicker. They took him back to the same hospital, and they sent him home. No Regeneron, no anti-clone, no monoclonal antibodies, none of that. Then when he went to the hospital the third time, he was advanced in COVID-19 and died before he could even get in the door. That happens to a lot of people. A lot of people are not being treated when they first, like all illnesses, the earlier you treat it, the better off you are. So I'm saying is, in addition to vaccines, you need therapeutics. You need equal access to equal high-quality medicines. We need to be fighting for that, too. We need to be fighting for Medicare for all in this moment.
Oh, I agree.
We need to be doing all of those things. All of those things. Not just one thing. All of them. Dr. Deborah Verholden has talked to us about the Swiss cheese model. She said the vaccine in and of itself is not going to do it. It's going to take masks, good oral and hand hygiene. It's going to take you boosting your immune system naturally by eating well, exercising, all of that stuff, getting your weight together. All kinds of things are going to have to happen. All things need to be equal. Remember that. And let's think about this, everybody. Dwight McKee made some great points. And, you know, Renee and Roosevelt and Paul, you all want to talk. And so, you know what? Stay right here. I'm not gonna put you off. I want you to be able to say what you've got to say. Clearly, you have a lot on your mind today. Back with more of the Santita Jackson Show in just a minute. Let's change the world. I'm Santita Jackson, coming to you from WCPT, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station. Boy, oh boy, have we got a lot to talk about this morning. Got to talk about this broken supply chain. Have you been to the store lately? Have you been looking on the shelves? They are empty, and it's like they're not getting restocked. And now this is becoming a big issue. Your toilet tissue and all kind of food, everything is costing more. We're going to be talking with Dr. Max Wolf about that right now. But I want to take a couple of these calls because you all have been holding and you've been calling in. And so if you would just limit your comments, if you can give me like a minute of your comments, I promise you we will revisit this again tomorrow morning. Let me go to Paul from Seattle. Paul, what's your comment? Paul?
Good morning, Santita. Yes,
hey, sweetie. What's on your mind today?
I don't want you to worry about my breathing because I'm going to be huffing and puffing. And that's because every morning I do 90 minutes on my exercise bike, and I've been sprinting out here for well over an hour. So don't worry about my huffing and puffing like you did last week. Okay. So
thank you.
Going on here. Well, Santita, that's why I can still wear the same pair of 501 Levi blue jeans that I wore when I was in college 40 years ago. So
wow.
If I don't figure, no one else will. Okay, so here's the point. I don't think we should make the mistake of arguing with the anti-vaxxers on the basis of their claim, my body, my right, as they try to make the analogy with abortion. Because remember, Roe versus Wade was not founded on the fundamental concept of my body, my right. It was founded on my right to privacy. And your right to privacy ends when you're spreading a virulent disease without other people's knowledge. It would be like saying that you have a right to go impregnate a woman without her knowledge and then tell her she can't have an abortion. We don't, our right to privacy to our reproductive rights is not the same as spreading a virulent disease. And though you don't ever have to take the vaccine in the arm, you may be restricted either your movement or you may be fined, but you're never required to take the vaccine. So that's the right to put the right to my body, my rights is not the argument. And we have to acknowledge that there are many, many drugs that we're not allowed to take under the notion of my body, my right, whether they're illegal or whether they're pharmaceutical. So that argument doesn't really play.
Well, you know, we'll talk more about it tomorrow. Keep on pumping, my friend, and be careful, okay?
Yeah.
Inspiring me. Let me go to Roosevelt. How you doing, Roosevelt? 1 minute, your comment.
Thank you, Santita. Paul is right on point. And here's the thing. I'll give you examples. You were giving examples. I think it's ridiculous to compare it to abortion because it's not the same. We're talking about pandemic. We have to keep this in perspective. Here's the thing. The police, they're directly in contact with the public. Here's an example. Here in Chicago, remember that policeman that stopped that young lady, African young lady that was walking her dog? He did not have a mask. So the masks don't work. You have to mandate. The carrot doesn't work. The president of the United States offered the carrot, incentives for people to get vaccinated. And here's the thing. If you're going to deny yourself from getting a vaccine because of religious reasons, or basically a lot of adults don't like getting poked with needles, then it's not going to work because you're not going to eradicate this. Santita, perspective. We are number one in numbers of COVID in the world. Before the vaccine, now we got a vaccine, we're still number one. Who's number two? Brazil. Both leaders of those two countries I just mentioned had corona. One leader from the United States denied his own followers from knowing that he took the vaccine. And to this day, he hasn't made a public announcement that people get vaccinated.
Yeah, actually, he has. Actually, he has. He has. At his rallies, and he's been booed down.
No, that's not a public announcement.
No, it actually, Roosevelt, you can't have it both ways. Roosevelt.
I'm sorry.
Roosevelt.
Is that a public
Roosevelt? Roosevelt. It might not be the public. Roosevelt. Stop. It might not be the public announcement you want. Roosevelt. We're not going to talk over each other. I will let you finish speaking because I told you you had a minute and you've taken two. He actually has said that. He said everybody get the vaccines. It might not be the announcement you want. He might not have come on TV or YouTube. He can't get on the social platforms. He's been blocked from that. But he has actually said that. So how much he supports it, I don't know. But your final thought here.
My final thought is this. You mentioned the guy that's responsible for this. He politicized it back in February of 2020. He did not let us know what was going on in the Bob Woodward interview. So it's a slippery slope. He didn't want people to get a mask because he didn't wear a mask. He got corona. He did not want people to get a vaccine. He got corona. So this has been politicized from the get-go, and you guys don't mention it. And I'm very surprised of you.
We mention it all the time, but it's been politicized from the right and the left. And quite frankly, I'm tired of it. What I want are some scientific conversations. What I don't want to hear anymore is people demonized. Stop it. Just stop. Let's just have, because we're not able to have, we're not even discussing facts anymore. We're discussing feelings. Roosevelt, I got to run to Renee, and then I've got to get on over to the supply chain, because that's a real big issue, too. Sending you much love. Renee, 1 minute, what's your thought?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Listening to DeWalt McKee, I'm shocked and a little bit concerned to learn that taking an aspirin a day isn't really necessary, because my grandbaby's been taking one for the past 15 years, and we know that aspirin can cause liver damage. But Johnson & Johnson, which makes the baby aspirins, and made that talcum powder that they knew caused cancer and then took it to Africa and so-called third world countries to market it when they weren't buying it here anymore. That ties in with the vaccine stuff. It makes me distrust the vaccines and these mandates, because we know that they try to make money for the pharmaceutical company to then give them money for their campaign. So it just ties in with that. And regarding Irving, in Florida, I believe you don't have to have the vaccine to play on their basketball team on the Miami Heat. So maybe he should go to a different team, and then he can still play his team, the Knicks, or the Nets, rather, the Nets. And maybe we should just start our own basketball teams where we're not just looking at the players like slaves, and we actually want them to be able to have choices. And one last thing, Santita, I think they passed laws now saying that if you normally have AIDS and you spread it, it's no longer a felony. And that's a very deadly disease, but they're not mandating that they have to take the drugs, and they're not mandating that they even have to disclose they have the disease.
Oh, I don't know anything about that, Renee. I didn't know about that.
It's been recent, that they decriminalized that. It's not a crime anymore. It's not a felony anymore.
Mm. Hmm.
But I'll send you the article.
Okay, please do.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I got to run because I got to do something else. But call back tomorrow, Renee. I'm liking the fact that you're calling in. And let me go to Anita from North Carolina. Anita, 1 minute. What's your comment?
Santina, numbers is important on anything, police brutality, people not getting the right health care, abortion, COVID, all of that does deal with numbers. Let me tell you something I saw years ago when my children were small. I was in Chuck E. Cheese. There was a mother. She took a receiving blanket. She put it down in a handicapped stall on the floor in the bathroom for her baby to crawl on it, I guess, while she used the bathroom. These people really do need to know about hand sanitation and hygiene and things like that, because they do not know. We have people using drugs, having intercourse with people, all kinds of things that are spreading germs. And all these things are bad. So hygiene is very important. Mm-hmm. And the numbers for COVID, I took the Moderna, the first shot, and I think I had an allergic reaction to it because my heart rate, I will not take the second shot. And I do not know if I can mix the shots and take another shot. So there are things that is affecting things. And that guy that talked about abortion, I believe, like he said, no one cares about that. Could be prevented, just like sanitation can help prevent, and masks. Abortion can be prevented. Rape can be prevented. All these things can be prevented. So we need to deal with all of that and save the life, or don't bring it in the world.
Well, you know what? I tell you what, and I want to thank you for calling, Anita. I hope you all will listen first thing tomorrow morning. I think we're going to have to expand this conversation with Dr. Deborah Verholden and Dr. Shanita Knighton, because what I'm hearing a lot of thoughts, and all these thoughts are legitimate. Roosevelt and Paul and Jim and Blake and Anita and Renee and on and on and on. That having been said, I want us to have some information from trusted sources. Trusted sources, that's very, very important. I would hope that we begin to bring infection preventionists into this conversation, because whatever your status, you need to know how to prevent infection, and not just COVID. I mean, there are so many viruses out here that can have a profoundly negative impact upon your health, and so we want to do everything we can to protect you on the Santita Jackson Show. Well, Max Wolf, Dr. Wolf, it's taken us a while to get to you today, because I really wanted to. I want to have as extended a conversation with you about these supply chain troubles. They're mounting. They're becoming a political problem for the president, but they're also becoming a pocketbook, a purse problem for the rest of us. Prices are going up on food and necessary supplies to run your home, and on and on and on. We have a real, well, I think it's a crisis. Some people might call it an impending crisis. What is the supply chain, and is it broken?
So great to be here. And I think there's elements to which other things we're talking about also have
relationship to the supply chain that's non-trivial. So the supply chain is the sort of way that we produce modern complex goods and services. So a lot of the goods and services we consume, maybe the most obvious one would be a flight or a car trip or something like that. They have tons and tons of companies and tons of raw materials that have to be carefully built and put together by all different kinds of businesses and regulatory agencies in order for us to take a plane trip or drive off in a car, right? And so actually we have a far-flung, very delicate global supply chain where different inputs come together from different hands, often unseen, unthought about, but it's a globalized economy, and that means this is a global story. So if your morning begins, it probably begins on imported fabric sheets, that the fabric was grown, the cotton maybe was grown in one place, was turned into fabric in another, it was sewn into sheets in another, it was shipped through three others, it was then sold in a retail store and then came home to you. When you stumble into the kitchen and you have some imported coffee in a mug that was made in China, to which you add some Caribbean sugar and then maybe an African banana. And so whether you've thought about it or not, the weather, the production conditions, the political conditions, the labor conditions, the situations on the ground, the regulators, the producers in 22 countries, 10 of which you couldn't spell the name of and maybe haven't heard of, are in your body and in your breakfast. And that's before you've go on and brush your teeth, right? And so that's a life that's highly interdependent with this sort of vast network of growing things and refining things and producing things and using things in the production of final goods and services. That's a global supply chain, right? Where everything that happens everywhere in the world kind of matters. It's part of the reason, even though we annoy people often, that a decent economist will tell you that everything is global now. So this idea that I'm just going to concentrate on me or I don't care because it's over there, outside being kind of narrow-minded and possibly mean-spirited, it's also flamingly inaccurate. It doesn't work, right? Now, so now we have a world in which it's very hard for producers to know how much demand they'll have because of COVID, because of economic shutdowns. There was a sudden massive stoppage in demand. And all over the world, and certainly here at home too, employees face this sort of terrifying moment of realization across the last year or two that whoever was employing them in many cases seemed to be overtly not so concerned with whether or not they, say, died at work. And if you're a firefighter or a police officer, if you have certain kinds of jobs, then you know, and hopefully you're compensated for taking a bit of existential risk, right? If you're in the armed services, if you're a firefighter, if you're a police officer, then as a woman or a man who wakes up every day, you know that your job could take your life. Right? And hopefully there's social space for that. There's compensation for that. There's benefits. There's planning for your dependents and family members and folks who might be affected if you were hurt or killed. But if you work in a fast food restaurant or as a cashier somewhere, reasonably probably didn't consider your work existentially threatening, right? We don't historically see somebody who works in the grocery store at the cash register the same exact way or pay them the same way that we see somebody who's wearing a big, thick, black, rubberized, flame-retardant jacket and crashing through the window to save us when our house is on fire. So a lot of people made realizations about their jobs that were uncomfortable, and some toothpaste doesn't go back in the tube. So it's hard to know where we stand. It's hard to know what's coming. There's been a lot of dislocation, a lot of death, a lot of destruction, and just a lot of uncertainty. And because that occurs, that slams into this very fragile, far-flung international supply chain, then the lack of international coordination, the differential and different timing of the effects of COVID in different places has created a series of shockwaves that our spread thin supply chains weren't terribly ready for. And we see that in prices. We see that in missing items. We see that in missing, microchips, which are creating issues in the automotive industry that are massive. We see that in some places in no pasta on the shelves. It shows up slightly differently in different places, but clearly we have some pressure of a sudden unanticipated increase in demand while folks still aren't back at work to produce more. And all these dislocations from systems of production and distribution that broke down or were damaged or were weakened substantially by the long COVID crisis, which, of course, means, again, I think I'm always the guy who says this, but which is not over.
We're talking with Dr. Max Wolf, economist, about this broken supply chain. I mean, many of us, we just go past, we take so much for granted, particularly, I think, in the United States. Dr. Wolf, we have lived in so much abundance for so long, we assume that when we go to the store, it's going to be there. Or if it's not there, I can get it in a hot second. And that's not happening now. That's not happening now. We're seeing how important our longshoremen and women in Long Beach, California are. I mean, how will this impact us financially? I mean, we're seeing it in terms of, you know, say the absence of different foods, supplies, and things like that. And now we're limited increasingly in how much toilet tissue we can buy and paper products and things like that. But how will this really impact us going forward if this is not corrected?
Yeah, but I think the issue that we're starting to see is that we don't have much assistance and planning in trying to be robust to these challenges, right? So if you think about the segment that you were having prior to the segment with me, a lot, obviously not all, okay? But a lot of the issues we have around masking and social distancing and vaccination have to do with a public that wasn't given a clear, calming, consistent message, right? Even though there may have been nothing but good intent in many cases, the fact that the message was a little bit scrambled and folks were told one thing and then told something else later that may have kind of contradicted what they had been told earlier, whether that was about masking or any other related thing. Probably mostly these were absolutely innocent efforts by government officials of both parties who were confused initially and trying. I think things got politicized quickly, but not right away, right? But that has led to a situation where all kinds of strange things grow in that darkness, right? And we're starting to see that here with the supply chain. We don't have a regulatory body that's kind of administering this process completely, notifying, we're not being told what's going on. And so folks kind of jerk from one crisis to another, and then they're bombarded by conspiracy theories and social media messages, many of which are neither knowledgeable nor well-intended, right? Because the other sad truth is part of the reason we're not that well-informed is the same reason that we're propagandized so extensively. It's because people don't care much about us. They just want to control what we think. And once you get to a point where various authority figures don't care so much about the public, but they do care what the public thinks, the public feels manipulated. And then in that vacuum, people variously decide who they want to distrust most. And while that does something for us, our lizard brains as humans, to decide who's evil and who to distrust, it doesn't help us find good information very well. So I think some of the issues, again, I know it's a complicated thing, but some of the issues around COVID are also becoming issues around supply chain, which is, how do I know what I can get when I can get it? Well, what's happening with the price of things? If I wait to buy this or that, will I have to wait for 6 months because it'll be so backordered? Will I have to pay a bunch more? Because even a 4 or 5% increase, if you're starting to think about purchasing something like a car or washing machine or dryer or refrigerator, that can have pretty major implications for your ability to afford the product.
Is there anything that we can do aside from, I guess our answer to everything has been to almost hoard. I mean, how is this going to get rectified?
That's a problem.
Okay.
If people hoard things, then it becomes a shortage. They become convinced that they need to hoard things, right? So once people all market prophecies are self-fulfilling. That's why meme stocks seem like they work, right? If you can get enough people to think they should do what you've already done in the market, you'll have a stampede, right? So every market meme that catches on, that goes viral, is fire in a crowded theater, right? And so once people see some legitimate shortages, there usually has to be some legitimate spark to these things. But once people see some shortages, face some uncertainties, unless they have a lot of faith that things will work out, they can kind of spin off, right? And so hoarding things is bad, particularly if you don't really need them. and other people do. Again, this gets back to the sort of, are we in this together or not, right?
Absolutely. I mean, so what is the, what is an answer at least? I mean, what is going to happen? I mean, now Long Beach, I think 50% of our international supplies come into this country through Long Beach, California, through that port.
Yeah.
And they're going to go to 24/7. So what, so how is this going to be worked? How is this going to be worked through?
I mean, so that's a little bit TBD, and I realize that's not the answer. Sorry, to be determined. And that's not the answer people want to hear. We are seeing a step up. We did see the Biden administration come in there and try to fix it. And again, without trying to weigh into the political too much here, because I'm not sure it's productive, we have spent 40 years disinvesting in our public infrastructure and our government. And we love making jokes about how useless it is, but then we scream bloody murder for that government we've defunded whenever anything goes wrong. Right?
Absolutely.
And we have to figure out if we want to have an adolescent approach to our government, right? I'm not sure it's a good idea. No offense to your adolescent listeners. But I think the situation is that if you want a regulatory or series of regulatory bodies that build in redundancies that cost business some money and sort of step in at a jam to keep things moving because the world just isn't that predictable, which between climate change and COVID and political uncertainty looks very likely to be long-term, then you need to begin to design systems that do it. Will never happen by magic or will alone, right? It has to be built and paid for. And paid for means some taxes. Doesn't mean you have to pay all your money out in taxes. It doesn't mean that you should put up with waste and corruption from the government. But it means that you need a government to come in and say, okay, we're going to help manage the supply chain. And we have some experience with doing this. At the extreme, we have the period in World War II where the central government said, hey, our war effort and our minimum domestic needs mean we're going to have to kind of take over the supply chain and literally ration things to make sure that nylon doesn't go to stockings more than it needs to so it can go to the war effort. Or that steel doesn't go to refrigerators and stoves that much because we needed to make tanks and planes and bombs. Right? That's an extreme version. But you can step into a supply chain to try to guarantee outcomes. We're beginning to see some work done there, right? Now, the good news is most of the supply chain disruptions we've seen are inconvenient as opposed to essential, right? So there was a point where we couldn't get supplies of gloves and sanitizer and masks. That's not inconvenient. That's life-threatening. Right? That was very, very serious. And all jokes aside, toilet paper also has some important sanitary functionality, right? So we do want to make sure that medical stuff is available. When the ivermectin stuff got a little out of control, you started to see there be a shortage of it for veterinarians who needed it, right? So those things are kind of dangerous. If we don't have bleach or we don't have gloves or we don't have masks or sanitizer, obviously there was a period, too, where the vaccine supplies were not adequate to the demand. Those are really pressing. I think those
hold that thought. Hold that thought. Government. I want to get hold that. Stay right there, Max. On the other side, everybody, on my YouTube channel and on the Santita Jackson and Friends page, I'm going to let Dr. Wolf finish what he was saying because this is so important. Mike Mercado, Matt Cummings, Paul Chavari, WCPT, AM 950 Radio. You are all the best. God bless you, everybody. Stay right here so we can get this. Get some closing thoughts from this brilliant economist, Dr. Max Wolf, on the supply chain that is broken. We got to get it fixed, everybody. See you tomorrow.